that works for them. And so I think we need to also understand and accept that there is some, there are good things to come from site-based. And we need to respect that and honor some of those things that we've been able to do. Melissa and her team talked tonight about their emphasis on 21st century skills. There are some electives that Summit is just not going to offer. It does not match their core values or their mission. And so we have to make our choices with those things in mind. So we're looking forward to this opportunity. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm hoping we're going to land on some solutions that our community and our kids are going to benefit from. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I just want to let everybody know that the scouting video that we're going to do, you won't have to get up for the whole 2 hours. You're just going to stop in. It could be as short as 5 or 10 minutes just to come in and give your input. So just wanted to be a heads up about that. So you can even get that video for 2 hours. So you can stop at any point during that 2 hour period between 6 and 8.
Thank you.
Just wanted to add that.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you.
Item 7 is recognition of visitors. We have two. Crystal Davies first.
Hi. Good to be back in the comfortable chairs, isn't it? Good evening, Board of Education and Superintendent Thomas Manning. I appreciate this opportunity to address you tonight on the subject that has weighed on my mind. That is offering safe harbor for our teachers for the 15-16 school year. Thank you, Mrs. Manning, for taking the time to personally call me and discuss my concerns. Per our conversation, you've decided to wait the results of the new assessments and the value-added data that will include the next generation assessments before you determine whether there is a need for a safe harbor agreement. If you determine that there are major discrepancies in this data when they are reported next fall, you will revisit the need for safe harbor at that time. That's a logical response if this were a typical situation, but it's not a typical situation, and that's why I'm here tonight to present information pertaining to park testing, the opt-out movement, the difficulties with the tests, and how it will skew the data. We know some problems existed in Reynoldsburg, though not to the extent of other Ohio districts. Let's factor in the problems in other districts with logging in, registering students, the test freezing or kicking students out mid-test, online drag-and-drop tools not working properly, and a host of other problems. In a report from 10 TV News, testing company Pearson reported it's received about 9,600 phone calls, emails, and chats from Ohio districts regarding problems administering the online exams since testing began. Concerning the opt-out movement, in one district, 450 children refused the test. Though the exact number of opt-outs is not known statewide, the number is definitely in the thousands. Let's add in the 11 other states participating in PARC, their problems with testing, and the number of opt-outs. The numbers are staggering. If Pearson received about 9,600 correspondences just from Ohio, with all the states involved, that number would be well over 100,000 correspondences to Pearson regarding test issues. The number of students who did not opt out but did not take the test seriously cannot be measured, but I'm fairly certain that number was represented too. There was enough concern that in June of 2014, House Bill 487 was signed into law. This provided safe harbor for school districts, meaning the result from the PARC test cannot be used to determine a district's report card rating. Though there was much debate during that time regarding language for safe harbor for teachers in House Bill 487, the final bill did not include absolute safe harbor, with the reasoning being it would make districts that use the test scores for evaluations change contracts already in place with unions. Senator Peggy Leonard, the state chair of the Senate Education Committee, said she assumed districts and unions would decide to skip using the tests. State School Superintendent Richard Ross is quoted saying he didn't think many districts would choose to use the test results. Damon Asbury, the Director of Legislative Services for the Ohio School Board Association, said using the scores flies in the face of the intent of the law. He believed few districts would want to use the scores. Then House Bill 7, offering safe harbor for our students, meaning children could not be held back or denied credit based on this year's test scores, passed both the House and the Senate with not one dissenting vote. The Senate returned the bill to the House with an amendment that districts would not lose funding for the kids who opted out of testing. I am sure there was a collective sigh of relief for district administration. Yesterday, Governor Kasich signed the bill into law. This law is effective immediately. The passing of these two bills is all the data we need. Safe harbor for districts, safe harbor for students. Our district teachers are left unprotected. As stewards of this district, the question should be asked, we didn't have safe harbor. Would we not be seeking relief? So I'm reminded of the parable of the unforgiving debtor. He was expected to have patience and given to him until he could repay his debt, and his debt was large. Then in turn went after someone with a much smaller debt and demanded payment. What a missed opportunity of compassion and forgiveness, knowing the district and the students were given safe harbor and then not extending the same to our teachers. This request isn't just for our teachers. It is also for the parents, for consistency, for our kids, district, and community. Thank you for your time, and please reconsider with the information provided to you tonight to move forward now with safe harbor for our teachers. Thank you.
Mr. Rodemeyer.
Not enough room up here. Ms. Tornero, Ms. King, Mr. Begeny, Ms. Long, Mr. Hayes, Ms. Thomas Manning. With your permission, Ms. Tornero, I'd like to make a very strong compliment toward someone just for a moment.
Sure.
I had the opportunity to meet with Mrs. Miller on Thursday because I had some questions. Some other members of the community had some questions that don't have the guts to come in and ask those questions. So I did, and I feel that Mrs. Miller answered my questions, and then some, very factually, very truthfully, and I think you have a tremendous treasure here at this district, and I would hope you would make every effort that you can to keep her.
Thank you.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. My name is Jim Rodemeyer, and I reside at 1020 Ruskin Drive here in Reynoldsburg. I am present to make comments regarding board policy BDDH, otherwise known as public participation at board meetings. The Ohio Schools Board Association states that having a portion of your board meeting devoted to public participation is encouraged and is something most boards do at every regular board meeting. All members of the board should be familiar with any board policy concerning public participation that exists within their district. Conversely, the Reynoldsburg board policy of public participation at board meetings states, and I quote, "The board recognizes the value to school governance of public comment on educational issues and the importance of allowing members of the public to express themselves on school matters of community interest." So it would seem that public participation at board meetings is accepted and invited. Let me deal with this a little bit on a historical basis. And I know Dr. Aaron Ross is here tonight, and he should be able to back me up on this. If I say something wrong, please correct me, because I know you were around when this happened. In the early 1990s, boards of education were having a problem with people yelling out, demonstrating, and basically acting disorderly at their meetings. Hence, the OSBA got together with advised boards of education to develop a policy on public participation at meetings. The policy BDDH was written and implemented. If you research any of the board policies in the surrounding school districts and look up board policy BDDH, you will find the same policy, and it is very similarly written in comparison to Reynoldsburg's policy. This has been done to allow meetings to proceed in an orderly and businesslike fashion, and not to allow for disorderly conduct. Last week, I emailed your board president, which you are all aware because I sent you copies, and I raised several concerns regarding this decision to alter the usual and customary practice of being able to sign up prior to any board meeting and make comments. Suffice it to say that after going back and forth a few times, we could not reach a consensus on what the policy mandates and what the new practice is in regards to when specifically a person can sign up to speak. The current altered practice is to sign up by noon the day of the board meeting, which I believe contradicts board policy and the board rules. Board policy BDDH states in paragraph 3, it is suggested, although not required. Let me repeat that. It is suggested, although not required, that persons or delegates desiring to be heard before the board regarding topics not on the prepared agenda notify the superintendent and or board president of the topic no later than 7 calendar days in advance to the meeting. Paragraph 4 states, the presiding officer of each board meeting at which public participation is permitted shall administer the rules of the board for its conduct. Skipping down to paragraph 6, the presiding officer shall be guided by the following rules, and I skip down to rule number 3. A speaker must be recognized by the presiding officer and shall present his or her name, address, group affiliation, if any, and topic to be discussed on a card provided, and said card shall be presented to the treasurer before the start of the meeting. So the specific deadline, as I see it, in the board policy is that someone, a citizen of Reynoldsburg, can walk into a board meeting, request a card to fill out to speak from the treasurer, fill that card out and hand it back into her, and the board president must recognize that person to be able to speak. If you want it any different, you must change the policy. Otherwise, you must conform to the current policy language and allow citizens to sign up prior to each meeting in order to speak. In my professional career, I composed, wrote, and enforced board policy as a small part of my job. I know a problem when I see one, and this is a problem. It is ultimately up to you to solve it. Otherwise, you may be challenged on it at some time. I encourage you as a board to help resolve this as quickly as you can. As always, I thank you for the opportunity to speak. Rule number 8 gives you, the board members, the right to ask any questions you have of the speaker. So, do you have any questions?
I have some comments. First off, rule number 3 does talk about a card that you hand to the treasurer. It doesn't talk about the treasurer handing cards. Prior to rule number 3 is rule number 1, which says that before you speak, you need to talk to the superintendent or administrators. And if you come in at 5 minutes to 7 or even 6:30, or, you know, chances that you're going to get rule number 1 taken care of.
May I respond to that?
Sure.
You and I carried on an email conversation about this for 2 days. So I think we discussed it. I think it had been under discussion,
true,
and there was no consensus between you or I as to when someone could come in and pick up the card.
No, I disagree with that. I ceased the emails just because I felt like we were going nowhere. So I wanted you to come, and then we could just finish our conversation here.
I felt we were going somewhere because I felt some movement occurring. And the thing is, since this last summer, there have been no cards provided to anyone.
I would like to read the letter that I wrote to you because I think it explains why I believe in the policy. And I'd first like to thank you for pointing out the discrepancy between our website, which said the day of, and our policy. There was a discrepancy there. It did not reflect the policy, so we changed that also. I do believe in the policy, and that's why I wrote this letter to another community member, and then I just copied and pasted the same because I feel like it really does say why I believe in the policy. Many issues, I would argue most issues that a parent or a community member may have can be best addressed without going before the board.
I agree with you.
Instead, speaking directly to the principal, the appropriate person, the superintendent, staff, and or with the superintendent is generally a faster, more efficient approach to resolving problems and addressing concerns.
I agree with that. I believe in the chain of
command. When concerns or disagreements are related to board or board policy, all five board members have the mailing, our email addresses, our phone numbers listed on the school website. This conversation that we were having as I was speaking to that is an example of getting to the bottom of an issue without the heightened emotion of a board meeting, which often leads to a communication breakdown. The agenda is, for the most part, and this is important, finalized 1 week prior to the monthly business meeting. It's important at that time for planning purposes to notice if and how many speakers we may have. This is why policy asks that a person notifies the superintendent or board of his desire to speak no less than 7 calendar days in advance of the meeting. Policy also asks that a person discuss the matter with the appropriate administrator before speaking. In addition to the reasons in my first two paragraphs, I intend to abide by this because it's policy and because it is common courtesy. Having a private discussion before turning an issue into a public grievance, and unfortunately sometimes public theater, is simply the polite thing to do. My hope for future meetings is for constructive dialogue, which will benefit the students, the schools, our city, and the image of our city. My goal is to have a professional, productive, informative meeting while respecting the time of those attending. And that's, I feel, very well explains how I feel about the policy. And I would like to add this. I believe that the policy was written, the spirit of the policy is that flexibility. It does not say is required because you called 5 days prior to be added to the agenda, and we allowed that because the spirit of the policy is that flexibility. It says this is what, for all those reasons I read, is why we have what we have, but we would like to be able to have some flexibility when you and I both know that this was an issue before the 7 days. If we put required in there, it kind of ties our hands. So
I understand
believe in the policy.
May I respond?
Sure.
My premise is what it states here in the policy. And even Mrs. Miller and I discussed this a little bit when we met last Thursday. The problem is that it states in Rule 3 that I can come in or a citizen can come in as late as prior to the board meeting after all what you have said, that an issue has been discussed by the chain of command, through the chain of command, whether it be a principal or superintendent or board member, and therefore there needs to be more airing of it as we're airing this right now, and I can come in and get that card from the treasurer and sign up prior to that meeting and be able to speak and be recognized.
So basically you're telling me it's number three. It's rule number three is where your issue
rule
is.
Rule number three is where the issue is. As I stated, if you want something different, you need to change it.
I don't want to take up any more time.
I don't either.
We'll look at number three. I feel like it says one thing, you say another, but we will definitely look at it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Mr. Rodemeyer?
Yes.
Yes. Do you mind? We've mentioned before that we're in a process of a full review of the policy manual. Section B or K, which
it's
has
BK
exactly
or
the
BBDH,
same policy,
yeah.
Hasn't come up for review yet, but we don't necessarily have to review these things in a specific order.
I know that.
So I think perhaps we'll take a look at this. And I do see, the numbers 1 through 10 with the following letters, it doesn't say and or, it doesn't say all inclusive.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't say whether it, and there are, in paragraph 2, there are two different situations. If the topic is to be discussed is not on the agenda, and if it is on the agenda, it addresses the two different ways. So I agree, we fully need some clarification in this policy.
I agree with you. One final comment from me, and then I'll go. No, I won't make the comment. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 8.01. I have an iPad that went away, so I'm flying by the seat of my pants here. Oh, item 8.01 to 8.04 is finances. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mrs. King, seconded by Mrs. Long. Before we go on, I would like to draw attention to item 8.04, which is like a resolution authorizing the issuance of bonds. It was explained to me, this is just a really good opportunity for us to save some money as a district. It was explained to us at the agenda review meeting that this is somewhat like refinancing your home, basically, only it's a lot more complicated, but that was a good way to understand it. We would be going from paying an interest of, is it 4.8, 4.5?
Just under 5%, 4.98%.
To down to 3, I think it was.
Based on the market conditions in early March, yes.
Okay. So this is, it's just a good opportunity, and I'm hoping things go. And again, thankful for Tammy for being there to do these things for us.
And can I just add, Tammy, can you just tell us what possibly the potential savings will be from the refinance?
We've had underwriters and a financial advisor monitoring the market for the last 6 months. And the market changes all the time. So this resolution basically authorizes the transaction if the market conditions are such that it's beneficial to the school district to have the transaction. In early March, when they ran the numbers, we could possibly save about $3.3 million over the life of the debt. We have about $50 million in bonds that were issued in 2008 when interest rates were much higher. Right now, the tax-exempt bond market is much lower than it was a few years ago, though it fluctuates. So they're running numbers every week to keep on top of this. And if the market conditions hold by the time we go through the whole process of the resolution, an offering statement, getting the bond sold, we could, you know, save substantial money over the life of the debt. And if we pay less in debt, then we can collect less taxes to cover that debt. So it's a good deal for the school district, mm-hmm. and for the community and for the taxpayers. What the resolution does is it doesn't specifically say we're going to actually proceed with this transaction, but we're going to monitor the market, and if the market conditions are right, then we'll proceed with the transaction. But this gets everything in place so that we can do that. And so let's hope the market conditions hold out for another month or so till we can get this bond sold.
So if they call and say, now, you already have the board's approval.
Correct. And we've set a target savings of 5%, and what I'll do then is when it gets closer to the time, because there's a whole process we still need to go through, I'll confer with the Finance Committee, and if we're at or near or hopefully over our target savings, we'll proceed with the transaction. If we're below that target savings, we'll wait. If we wait too long, we'll probably have to come back and have another resolution and do some different things, but this sets everything up so in the next few months, if the market conditions are right, we can proceed with the transaction.
Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. King?
Aye.
Mrs. Long?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye.
Mr. Hayes?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye. Item number 9, 9.01 through 04, on for action. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mrs. Long, seconded by Mr. Hayes. Is there any discussion?
Superintendent, I did have one question. One of the individuals who's having a change in status, Chris Campbell, moving from a teacher position to a blended learning coordinator, have all necessary, in what capacity will he serve throughout the rest of this year or going into next year? Because usually, you know, it's March. It's usually not a common time to get those types of transitions. So,
Madam President, Mr. Begany, thank you. That's a nice segue to introduce Chris Campbell as our new blended learning coach. Chris will be serving, his title is going to be administrative, but he will be supporting teachers in the classroom as they initiate blended learning with their students and throughout the district. We thought it best to identify a potential candidate to transition out of Chris's classroom, which we spent the months of January and February doing. And he has been working to transition that teacher, who I believe started a couple weeks ago, to the kids in the classroom so that he can transition out and get us set up for a couple things we have coming up, including assessments at the end of the year. but our summer institute and planning for the fall. So we felt it was paramount that we transition him out if possible this spring as opposed to waiting the summer.
Okay, thank you.
A couple of other things, President Tornero. I want to personally acknowledge Dr. Manzola, who announced to her staff last week that she is going to be moving on. Dr. Manzola is delayed on a flight. She is transitioning to Florida to live with her family, to be closer to her family. But Maria has come into this district, and she cared and on behalf of our kids and cared for that staff and led in that building, and for that she'll always be a Raider. So I want to thank Maria personally for that. You also see a retirement notice from Jack Pertell. He has indicated his desire to retire. He has also indicated his desire to work. So I will be engaging Jack in a conversation about returning in some capacity. But I did want to make full disclosure. I wanted to say that. You also will be hopefully approving another administrative role. Tommy Timmons will be serving as the Innovation Lab Coordinator. Tommy is a Reynoldsburg lifer. He is committed to this district and has done some extraordinary work. Tommy has agreed to lead the work with the Innovation Learning Lab, both the static unit we have at eSTEM and the mobile unit, and just really be a resource to teachers on helping them use those labs to get results from kids. So I'm excited to have Tommy on board. Again, although both of these roles are titled administrator, the purpose of that is to have them available to me in the summer and to our staff in the summer, and to be at the table as we make decisions around technology, curriculum, blended learning, technology and software, and just really super excited to have two more teachers in leadership roles. I did some mental math a few minutes ago and realized that 10 of the 14 principals we have in this district were teachers in this district. So we grow our own. We do very well doing that, and we're excited to have Tommy and Chris on board. Last, I want to acknowledge Linda Young's retirement. Linda has also been a lifer in and out of our district. She is currently the librarian over for the high school, and she works at both eSTEM and Livingston. She worked at Hams, Baldwin Road, and as I indicated earlier, she is retiring as a librarian at Livingston. We'll miss Linda, and I'll miss her costumes and her interactions with kids. And we wish her all the best. And Mrs. Tornero, there is one error in the agenda, I believe, under employment of a teacher, Mary Ellen Weeks. It's a district-wide position hire. It should say role to be determined. It does say that. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mrs. Long?
Aye.
Mr. Hayes?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye.
Mrs. King?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye. 10.01 is state assessment. Dr. Alec?
Good evening, President Tornero, Superintendent Thomas Manning, and board members. I am pleased to come to you tonight as the Director of School Improvement and Accountability to talk to you a little bit about our state assessments and how we did at our first big assessment launch, I'll say. And I realized as I was preparing this presentation that I'm getting old, because I felt like, oh my goodness, I got to tell the story about the assessments and so forth. So what you're going to see here is that I felt like we needed to step back for a second and look at where have we been, where are we now, and where are we going? Because you can't really talk about assessment
without talking about the other two big things, curriculum and instruction. And I think that's very important because assessments aren't standalone. They are like that accountability measure of our curriculum and our instruction. So you'll see that over the last 4 years, we began a transformational journey of the whole student learning process. And it all started with our Race to the Top grant that we received. And we launched an extensive professional development around the curriculum, the Ohio's new learning standards. And we really worked with our staff on what are those new learning standards, what does that mean for us, what does that mean, what is the shift from our old academic learning standards to the new learning standards. And we really worked with staff on let's look at those standards. Then the second thing that we did was we looked at instruction. Knowing what our new goals are with the curriculum, what does that mean for instruction? And I'm sure many of our teachers out here, if you've been around, you know we talked about rigor and relevance. We've talked about personalized learning environments. We've talked about blended learning strategies. We've talked about project-based learning. We've talked about an emphasis on problem solving and critical thinking. And so when you take the curriculum and you take the instruction, which we've been working on over the last 4 years, now it's culminated into that bottom piece up there, which is assessments. For the assessment piece, we have also been working with our teachers over the last 4 years on creating quarterly assessments aligned to the Ohio Learning Standards, changing the items and revising those items so they reflect our improved instructional practices. Last spring, we participated in the field testing of the new assessments so that we could get a firsthand look at what those assessments look like. And then we also moved to digitizing our assessments with the, I guess it started last December when we contracted with Ingrade to digitize our assessments K-8 and start to provide those technology enhanced items. So that leads us to where are we? It leads us to supports. So we've worked with what are we doing with curriculum, what are we doing with instruction, how do assessments play into that? Well, we couldn't do that alone. There was other things that have helped us launch the new next generation assessments, and that is the support that we have been provided by, I'll say, Darush, thank you, and all of our IT infrastructure and our IT you guys need some females because I always call you the IT guys. So, but our IT gentlemen that have helped us. One of the things is our Board of Ed, with under the direction and recommendation of Mr. Will Kerr, we upgraded all of our bandwidth across the district, which was extremely important in us not having all the issues that you just spoke about. That helped us tremendously. We conducted audits through ODE on our readiness for online assessments. This was done last year, and it was also done this fall. We participated again in that statewide dress rehearsal. Well, this was the statewide dress rehearsal in January, which allowed our teachers to actually get into the system as a big dress rehearsal across the state to see, one, if our system could hold the traffic, as well as if the test nav from Pearson and AIR could hold the traffic. So participating in that statewide dress rehearsal, or the also known as the stress test, really helped us. After we did that, we got everyone's feedback. We came together as a team, and we looked over, okay, what were the errors that we most saw? What were our issues? We found that some of our Google Chromebooks were having issues. They didn't have the little icon down at the bottom. I think that happened over at Worms. I think it also happened at ESTEM. So we found a lot of errors that could have occurred when we had launched the actual assessments. Our technology team has been invaluable. So again, kudos to them. We also did a plan where we had a technology support person at each campus or building during the testing time. So when that error did come up, we had tech in the building that could address any of those issues. We also, another support is communication, and our communication plan. So we provided, over the last 4 years, we've been providing information to our teachers and our students and our families about these new assessments, about what they'll look like. We, as soon as Park launched sample questions, we would send those out. I know Park has like a weekly email blast where you can get a question a week or a question a day that we would send out to our principals. We also did the field test, and we looked at all those lessons learned, and we've been providing resources to families, like that website there. We've also had curriculum nights and newsletters and PTO meetings and PTA meetings in regard to what to expect. So that leads us to at the beginning of March when we launched our state assessment implementation. Overall, in the big picture of things, it was exactly like Mrs. Davies, correct, said. It was successful. We had minor issues compared to other school districts. We still had issues. We still had some minor bumps. But overall, I'm considering it a success. We did only do the performance-based assessments. We will have the end-of-the-year assessments in April, and we're hoping that it just continues to smooth out. We did make our elementary principals made the decision to administer paper to pencil for grades 3 and 4 this year to try to, I think, lessen the impact of what those new kind of test items look like compared to also testing online. We felt like our 5 through high school students were prepared for those online assessments, and so that's how we launched them out. We still, to this date, have 6 students, 4 of them being at Wagner Road Middle School, which we are working with today, are still having issues. We have contacted ODE. They have accelerated our issues with Pearson and with AIR, and it's actually 4 students in particular that have had issues on both sites. So we are hoping to resolve those as soon as possible. If not, we will opt them out, so they will not have to take the PBA through ODE. They'll offer us a waiver on those students. So overall, our implementation of the new next generation assessments was successful, and I credit that to thoughtful planning, it being a 4-year initiative. It not just being, oh my gosh, we have new assessments come March, we're going to do this in December. Strategic professional development, transforming of our curriculum way back when, to those new Ohio learning standards, and our instructional practices, changing those along the way, and building in supports through infrastructure and communication. So where are we going? Well, we all know that the only thing constant in life is change. So we're going to continue to model the Plan, Do, Study, Act, or the design cycle that you heard so much about today, with our own decision-making, and we're going to be reflective. Model lifelong learning for all of our colleagues. We're going to keep our core values at the center. All students will achieve and grow at high levels, and we're going to reach our district goals. And our biggest district goal is to ensure that all students that graduate from Reynoldsburg have options when they leave us, that they are college and career ready. And taking assessments, good, bad, and different, wherever you fall on that, is part of that. Getting into college, SAT, ACT, all of those things, it's going to be a lifelong skill that they're going to need to do. So we know that this process has been, like I said, a journey. And I know I'm getting old because I had to tell you that whole story to get to where, just to tell you about the assessments. But I'll be glad to answer any questions you may have.
I did have one question.
Sure.
The students that aren't testing, the ones that when other kids are testing, have they accounted for the time that is what they're doing during that time when they're not testing?
Yes, every building principal had a plan in place for that. Mm-hmm. We had 65 students opt out across our district, which is approximately 1.5% of all students that tested. And it actually only represented 50 families in our districts that opted out. There were families that had multiple students, so it represented 50 families, 65. And for the most part, my understanding, and I can't say this in all cases, but I can say for most of the schools, they had students either go to the library or a designated classroom, and they worked on either classwork or blended learning lessons or other academically focused lessons, is my understanding.
Okay, I just was curious because I know a couple of parents had commented to me, and please, they were happy with it because their kids actually got 2.5 hours extra of gym because they got to play and have kind of an extended recess. And they were not complaining. They don't want that change. They actually kind of like that just because it was an opportunity for some of the kids to burn off some steam. But I just wanted to make sure the plans were in place to make sure that the good use of their time is there. And again, after seeing my kids take their test today, I could imagine that a couple hours of gym would probably be a good thing for a lot of them as well.
And actually, the feedback from students, Mr. Begney, has been very good. Due to the fact that we have broken it up into units, one day, unit two, unit three. For instance, on the fourth grade assessment, there was only 7 questions in one unit, right? And then the next day, 7 questions. And then the next day, maybe 8 or 9 questions. So, and matter of fact, speaking with feedback from teachers and with principals, they're thinking, maybe we should put 2 units in one day so it's not so extended. So these are all the plan, do, study, act things that we will do. But I don't think that it was as stressful for students in the sense of having to sit for 2.5 hours and do like 45 questions.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Were the students who opted out of the assessments, Dr. Alec, was that just pretty much evenly dispersed throughout the district, or was there any particular grade level that we saw?
Yeah, we saw it at the middle level, and actually 30 out of the 65 students were at Baldwin Road Junior High. So over almost half were at Baldwin Road. I have the breakdown by building if you'd like. Does anybody want? Okay. So HS Squared had 2, Baldwin Road had 30, Hannah Ashton had 4, Herbert Mills had 7, Rose Hill had 3, Slate Ridge had 2, Summit Road Elementary had 3, Taylor Road had 3, Wagner Road Middle School had 8, and Wagner Road Junior High had 3 students. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 10.02 is orchestra students traveling to St. Louis. Mrs. Van Sant or Mrs. Galkin? Yes, on for discussion.
Yes, we're just discussing tonight. The orchestra has traditionally taken a major trip every other year, and next year will be our other year. And we have... We've been to Nashville, Toronto, Chicago, New York, Atlanta, and New Orleans. And my goal in selecting places to go is to try to go places that some kids may never have the opportunity to go. We'll probably never go to D.C. because they all go in the eighth grade, so they never want to go back, even though there's you could go 10 times. But the cost of the trip this year is $600, $605. Unless we get enough kids going, it could drop a little bit. Maybe $20. We have several opportunities to do some pretty cool things. We in St. Louis, let's start with food. Hard Rock Cafe and an Italian place called Favazza's. We are looking to do a tour of Busch Stadium, go to the City Museum, which if you've ever been to St. Louis, the City Museum is like Cosi on steroids. It's a multi-story building. It's not completely full, but even up on the roof, there's a Ferris wheel and a school bus they can climb around in and things up there. That part, unfortunately, will be closed when we're there in November. The World Aquarium, kids always love to go to the aquarium. The Arch, of course, you can't go to St. Louis and not go to the Arch. The St. Louis Science Center and the St. Louis Zoo. We'll do a clinic with a college person and go to the symphony and a Broadway show, you know, to be determined. The schedule's not out yet. The company that we are traveling with is Bob Rogers Travel. We've done 2 trips with them, and they've been phenomenal. The person that I deal with that company is a former choir director, so he's a teacher. He's been there, done that, and gets it. And the details that they take care of so that I don't have to are immense. We have the what's the word I want? That last paper that Ron Strushen always made sure I had. Liability. That stuff is all taken care of, and I believe that expires before we go. But my travel agent has it on his calendar already to make sure that I get the updated one as soon as it's out. The kids are going to pay $605. I've been here 13 years, and the trips have only gone up about $200 over the course of that time, so that's not too bad. And we will take chaperones with us. We always take a full-time nurse with us. The kids have to buy 5 of their meals. 4 of them are included. I'm trying to think of things you might have questions about, and I'm done. So what did I leave out? What questions can I answer?
That was really thorough. Thank you.
I try.
It's an exciting, I like the, it's just an 8-hour drive or so, and the Arch is such a neat place to be. That's
it
exciting.
It is, and we hope to do I don't know if you've been to the Arch, there's a huge underground area where you buy your tickets and go, but it would be a great place to perform. There's plenty of space that we can perform there, so that would be one of our public performances, probably the only one. But
I saw that.
So I think that would be fun. And we'll probably try to get music from, like, Meet Me in St. Louis or something so we can be location appropriate.
That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I will say that next month, when hopefully it's approved, I will have to send somebody in my place because we'll be having dress rehearsals for our spring concert that night.
Thank you. Item 10.03 is Summit Road and their fourth grade trip. Do we have? Oh, no.
For the past 3 years since Summit's been in existence, we've had a fourth grade signature event, really, as fourth grade camp. It's an overnight at 4-H Camp Ohio in St. Louisville. The children come to school on Thursday, and shortly after we get everybody off buses, we get back onto the bus to go to 4-H Camp Ohio. We take usually about 15, 16 chaperones with us. The kids spend the night, and we work on all the things related to our core values as well as inquiry. We do stream studies. We do pond life. We do some pioneer life in terms of some of the social studies standards that connect to fourth grade. We look at some of the team building activities that really work on our collaboration skills and those types of things. So it's kind of one of the things when we looked at this year mapping out what are the experiences that kids have at Summit that make them a Summit graduate before they go on. Camp is one of those things that we've listed as a key experience for them to have prior to their graduation at Summit. The cost is $45 for kids, and our PTO picks up, that's just the camp piece, the PTO picks up the cost of the transportation for our kids, so that's all picked up by them. We do have our liability insurance as well. They will eat 2 meals there. They take a sack lunch with them on the day we go, so they have dinner and breakfast there, and then we have pizza for them when they come back on Friday. Any other questions?
That's great. Thank you. Thank you.
Before Melissa leaves the podium, the VISTA agreement is also in this section of the agenda, and she, I believe, has a VISTA person here.
Oh, okay.
Would you mind introducing your VISTA volunteer?
Oh, there she is. My VISTA volunteer is Nana Opong, and Nana has been a wonderful resource for us. Nana was actually a communications major, and if you're unfamiliar with VISTA, basically Nana has taken a year out of her life to volunteer for very minimal amounts of money, and she has spent immense number of hours with us. I think there's a commitment of a certain number of hours over the school year, so she's with us through July. She has set up, we talked about our STEMBOT Readers program for kindergarten and first grade when we did our CIP plan, and Nana has been instrumental in setting that up. I basically went to her and said, this is what we would like. We know that if we're going to intervene with kids, we need to do it early, and they really need to be in very small groups. And so she went to our high schools, each one of our academies, and recruited high school students as well as community members. She went out to some of the senior centers around the area and looked for people who would be willing to meet with our kindergarten and first grade kiddos one-on-one for an hour twice a week for an 8-week commitment, which was an immense commitment really for a high school student in my opinion. And she has trained them, pulled all the resources together. We've had very good success and very great good parent feedback on that. And then she also does all kinds of other things for us in terms of like our PTO night. She provides the parent, the piece for our kids. She provides an activity for our kids to do where our parents are engaged at PTO. She does a lot of data keeping for us. She's just an all-around talent for our building, most definitely. I'd like to keep her.
Thank you,
Thank
Melissa.
You.
We have 5 VISTA volunteers throughout the district, Mrs. Tornero. A couple at Mills who have led a blood drive that was apparently shut down because it was so successful. Just real critical partners in educating our kids and putting programs together to support our kids and our staff. So we are very, very grateful and really hoping to continue the partnership into next year.
And that's on for action along with 10.04, 5, and 6, which are summer school. 7 is approving Mrs. Pennycuff's the travel to Orlando. And then finally, 10.08, the VISTA Memorandum of Agreement. So do you have a motion?
Second.
Moved by Mr. Beckany, second by Mrs. Long. Is there any more discussion? Pardon me? She presented last time. Yeah. Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Beckany?
Aye.
Mrs. Long?
Aye.
Mr. Hayes?
Aye.
Mrs. King?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye. Item 11 is policies. We have 3 items on for discussion. Item 11.01 is the teacher conference days for the 15-16 school year. I don't know if we want to break these up and maybe these are not on for action today, just for discussion. 10.02 is the calendar change. It's the start schedule, if I remember right. I'm looking at it before. The staggered start at the beginning of the school year. And finally, the fun one is the calendar for 2016-17 with 3 options. So am I right that the group will pick their favorite and bring it to us? We are not picking one of those 3.
Well, we have board members who served on the calendar committee who have weighed in on options. I'll start with that one, President Tornero, since you started with that one. I convened a calendar committee to discuss 3 different options, which you see reflected on the agenda tonight. We basically just model calendars that we've used in the past and put those in front of teachers, 2 of them, and parents and administrators and board members, and we just kind of worked through what our objectives were. And what I heard most people saying is we wanted to maximize instructional time before assessments. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to start as early as possible and really get some critical instructional time in the fall. We really wanted a midweek start for our younger children. We don't want to start the school year on a Monday. We think it's a little less traumatic in some cases for my middle school boys anyway to start on a Monday. We'd rather start them on a Wednesday. And so that was a priority. We wanted to end as quickly as we could after assessments. We don't want kids hanging in June. And there was some desire to try to see what an end of the school year before Memorial Day would be. And so you have a couple options there that reflects that. And we also, of course, wanted to provide for natural breaks for our children and our staff. We didn't want to have all these scattered days that we had, for example, in January, days off and then inclement weather, which really breaks up the month and instruction. So I would think it's safe for me to speak for the parents, administrators, and teachers, and the board members who I also work with on this, that we are all leaning toward option 3, but you will have those for a month for you to review.
Superintendent, I just had one comment. I was just briefly looking through to bring to everyone's attention. October 29th, the conference dates for Baldwin, Wagner Road Junior, Wagner Road Middle, and Hannah Ashton Middle is falling on what will most likely be Baker's Night for Halloween. I don't know if that's something that we would want to switch at some point in time. I love myself a good Halloween costume, so I know a lot of others out there do as well.
Okay, we will look into that.
Is there any more discussion on any of those items, the the conference days or the split start? If not, we'll move on to item 12, business and operations. 12.01, 2, and 3 are all on for action. Yes. Do I have a motion?
Second.
Moved by Mrs. King, second by Mr. Begany. Is there anything you'd like to say about your...
I'll just say, as you know, we're a member of the Metropolitan Educational Council. What this is the ability to participate in their natural gas purchasing program. This resolution would basically run from July 1 of 2015 through June 30th of 2017. By entering into this agreement, we'll basically save about $1.13 per million BTUs. And so, based on our current usage, we could expect to see about a $38,000 savings from what our current spend is. So this is a great opportunity to jump into this.
Thank you.
Did you, Todd, also want to talk about the item 12.03, the surplus items that we're getting rid of? Those were because we got the new items.
The food service.
That's correct. That was part of a grant through the ODE that we received at, I believe, Hannah Ashton, the serving line. This is the old equipment that's coming out.
Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. King?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye.
Mr. Hayes?
Aye.
Mrs. Long?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye. Item 13, executive session for purposes of discussing employment, if I'm correct. We will come back for a vote. Am I right, Tammy? No?
No, I don't think there's going to be action after that. You'll come out to adjourn, but other than that.
Okay.
Mrs. Tornero, I'm sorry, but I missed somebody who's retiring, and I think is super important. And I mentioned that Deborah Flanagan, a cook at Wagner Road Junior High, has decided to move on to the next chapter of her life. And she's been here for 22 years. And I am sorry I missed that earlier, but it's super important that we honor and thank her for her service to our kids. So best wishes to Deborah.
On the executive session, do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Begany, seconded by Mrs. King. Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Begany?
Aye.
Mrs. King?
Aye.
Mr. Hayes?
Aye.
Mrs. Long?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Executive session says action. It says action.
Okay.
Jenna Allen.
Stop the recording on that.